And let's say here, your profession, Gene, was?
Law enforcement.
And your profession, Gene?
Law enforcement.
And your profession, Steve?
Retired law enforcement.
We've all done other various things in between. I mean, raise cattle, work for people. I work cattle for a living. I'm a cowboy. That's what I do, even though I'm retired law enforcement. Do custom leather work as well. You know, I make art in leather.
Well, your mother said earlier today that you're quite an artist in that area.
Yeah.
I've displayed.
There was a holster laying on this table. Yeah, there it is.
I've displayed during rendezvous at the museum there in Tulsa.
Oh, have you?
Yes. Yeah.
That holster that he made for me.
That's beautiful. When you come to the museum and people realize you're the direct descendants of Thomas Gilchrist, you must get some special attention.
Nope.
Not really.
Last time I went, I didn't tell anybody who I was. I just dropped a donation in the box like anybody else and walked through the museum.
Where do you like to go? What do you like to see in the museum?
I like the Western galleries where Remington Russell, Lee, Sharp, all their Western art is. That's my favorite gallery.
Steve, how about you?
Everything in storage.
Yeah, I would have to say there because we've both been down there in storage and seen
what's
there.
Yeah, that's one thing. We get to go look at stuff in storage that the public doesn't get to see. That's where the real treasures are.
It's just unbelievable the amount of art that was collected, not just paintings or statues, but books, documents, Indian artifacts that are housed in the basement of that museum.
There's pieces that's had to be restored over the years, but from the early years to now, there's so much technology to take care of art now that Granddad had no knowledge of back then. The lights, you know. You have to have special lights that won't harm the papers.
That's why Helmrich Center has been such a blessing.
You can go in that one hall where they have documents like one of the handwritten copies of the Declaration of Independence, things like that, and the lighting is so low, you have to have it that way or the ink just fades right off the paper or paper degrades. They didn't have that kind of technology.
But you know, like I said, without people like Duane King and this partnership with University of Tulsa, it wouldn't be what it is today.
You know, you talked about Belle Harlow, Tom and Belle divorced. But they remained friends, didn't they?
All their lives. When Granddad moved from Tulsa to San Antonio, Dad and Bart had a house on Westwood Drive. There was one house in between them in a vacant lot that Dad owned. About six blocks over, Granddad bought a house for Grandmother. And she lived there until she died. He divorced her, married Norma.
And that didn't last very long.
No, it was rather a bitter divorce.
And, of course, made headlines.
Oh, yes, all over.
And made headlines all across the country because she had been Miss America.
Yes.
He wasn't the kind who would seek attention, was he?
No. No, all he wanted to do was visit with his family when he could and take care of his collection. Now, I don't know if you realize that after he gave the museum to the city, he changed his outlook on his collecting. He started going back digging the Indian mounds that were available to dig. What started, he met a man, Greg Perino, and he and Greg would go and take these mounds, and Greg would sit there and document everything on that mound to where he could put that mound back together from his drawings, his photographs. He's the one that got Granddad to buy this little Papa Johnny bulldozer. Greg would go out there and probe the mound completely with a probe rod to find out how deep the first burial was or the first whatever. And then they could use the dozer to push the overburden off and made it much faster. Somewhere I've got a photograph of Granddad and Greg in an extremely large mound where they dug a ditch right through the middle of it because as they probed, they didn't find anything in that. So they could profile the mound. And you can see every piece of that mound where the different dirts were brought in. The size of that mound and the carrying capacity of the people at that time would be a basket, maybe half yard at the best. That mound was, I'm going to say, 60 feet tall by about 90 to 100 feet long.
Where was that?
That was up in Illinois, overlooking the Illinois River. There was several burials in that one, but they had one tomb in there. But the best I can remember, there was a man and woman. It had been a log tomb with the dirt put over it. Both of them were 7 feet, which is extremely large for back at that time. they must have been, as the saying goes, high class, because they had a lot of jewelry with them. I remember there was a headstone about that big around above them. It was sent to University of Chicago, and I never did hear what they decided it was. Matter of fact, all of the bones that were dug all went to University of Chicago and then back to the museum. They cataloged them up there, did carbon-14 tests on them. Granddad had wanted to build a diorama in the museum to show these, mm-hmm. to show how they were buried, never to get around to it. One of the directors of the museum, I talked to him about it, and he was all for it, but couldn't get the money.
Your father and your uncle Bart, because of their father, were they art collectors? Did they get interested in wanting to collect anything?
Not really. They liked art, and both of them bought a little bit, but they were not collectors.
I deal with Indian artifacts, some with a lot of friends of mine around the nation, airheads and different things like that. Greg Perino is the most well-known person that authenticated anything from that era, from when he was with great-granddad up till he died. You can say his name at one of these artifact shows, and they're like, yeah, you got something from him?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they want it because they know it's going to be the real deal. You know, it's authenticated through him.
You know what a flint napper is?
No.
Greg was an expert flint napper. He could sit down with a nail and a piece of flint and make an arrowhead in just a few minutes. You couldn't hardly tell the difference, but he always put something in there that would be different from what it was supposed to be, so that it wouldn't be used as authentic.
Well, both you, Steve, and Gene are interested in art and art world because of Thomas Gilchrist. There's no question about that. Talk to us about the effects of having a great-grandfather such as Thomas Gilchrist has had on your life.
It's just been amazing that one man could collect what he's collected, and it's on display in one place for the world to see. It couldn't be done today. There's no way.
No.
The price for having to collect what he did, if you try to do it now, is immeasurable. I mean, you couldn't mm-hmm. afford it.
No.
Nobody would let go of it, and if they did, you couldn't afford to buy it, to collect it.
He's already got it all.
Well, no, he didn't get it all. He didn't buy everything Philip Cole had either, because I know where there's some more of that at.
Yeah.
You say you know where there's more of the Cole collection?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
There were quite a few pieces of it he didn't sell at that time to great-granddad, and he donated and sold others to other museums over the years. There's several other museums that have pieces from Cole, from his collection.
I understand that Cole allowed that sale to happen because Thomas and Cole were alike. It wasn't just about money.
Kind of a kinship about yeah. what they liked and how they went about collecting, what their perception of art was, what they wanted the world to see.
Yeah, Cole was careful not to sell it to somebody who didn't have the same appreciation he had.
Right. He really didn't want it going into a lot of just private hands that were going to keep it in their house. He wanted it to be seen by everybody. So he kind of had the same thought process about art that great-granddad had.
You know, we do a lot of what-ifs.
Yes.
If those two personalities hadn't clicked, who knows where this whole thing would have been today.
Yeah. And, you know, in great-granddad's later years, when he started digging the mounds more into the artifacts, kind of think of him as the original Indiana Jones.
Yes.
He just wasn't swinging right. through vines and popping a whip.
Right. Now, you two boys, like I'm calling you now, you're certainly passing on this legacy to your children, and they must know much about would be great-great-grandfather, I guess. Is that true?
I've got two sons, and one of them's a little more interested in it than the other. In fact, I was just in Indiana about a month ago to see my young son graduate from high school, and we went to a museum there in Indianapolis, the Alajor Museum. They also have some of the Cole collection there as well. They know Gilchrist. It's a museum along the same lines as Gilchrist, but it doesn't have any of the ultra-modern art in it. It just all caters to Native American and Western art.
Another point in this whole story is that when Thomas Gilchrist needed help financially, maybe that was the best thing. I don't know.
In the long run, it probably was.
It certainly kept the collection intact from being sold off to individuals where it might not ever been seen again. So, yeah, I think it was probably better off that way. It kept it all intact and in a public viewing area where people can come and see it rather than some old collector with a bunch of money having it in his house somewhere.
Right.
I just wish that the university had taken over management of the museum way before they did. The museum would be so much further ahead today.